Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, friends, audience, America. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and I want to give you an understanding today of why the microbial world, infections, parasites, viruses, bacterias, I hate to say this, may be smarter than we are. Because we're failing. We're not doing that well in the microbial game. Great book a number of years ago, Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. He won the Pulitzer Prize for this book, my friends. He won the Pulitzer Prize for pointing out that more than anything, or as much as anything, we as a species have been dominated by microbes from the beginning of the species. You see, but in the last 100 years, with the advent of antibiotics, we have copped an attitude, and that attitude, which is falling apart, told us from 1940 on that we had conquered the microbial world, that no longer would bacterias and viruses and parasites rule us. We would, in fact, rule them. This is not the case. The statistics do not bear it out. And worse yet, not to turn this into a fear show, but the fact of the matter is we are being outwitted, outsmarted, outplotted, outstrategized, outcolonized, outproduced many, many, many times over. We're not doing that well as far as what it takes to compete with an infection. And any good practitioner on both sides of the fence, holistic and allopathic, must admit, basically, that we're not winning the war. We say we are. But that's our, I think, arrogance, truly, to think that we can genetically engineer pharmaceutical drugs or rely solely upon herbs to combat some of the treachery that parasites can play in your body, I think is a terrible oversight. So I'm going to tell you the story of a parasite named Sacculina, Sacculina carcini. Yes, that's the name of this parasite. This comes out of an article that you can get for yourself out of Discover Magazine in the year 2000. And in this article, Carl Zimmer, who brought the article to us, was suggesting that there was a lot more going on in the parasitic intelligence than we had thought. In addition to which, I want to turn you on to another book. You know I love books. Plague Time: How Stealth Infections Cause Cancers, Heart Disease, and Other Deadly Ailments. This is Paul Ewald. Paul Ewald is a biologist of numerous awards. And Ewald wrote this book a number of years ago, basically saying the same thing. And so what I'm saying to you today, first thing that I want you to leave the show with today, is an understanding that bugs are smart. They're really smart. They're adapted way better than we are. Whatever you hit a bug with, it figures out what you hit it with. It goes into its cocoon. It reproduces with other bugs, and it fixes the problem. It morphs its genetic code far faster than mankind can. We can't win against that unless we employ, I'll tell you at the end of the show. So this does have a good ending. But if you think that you're going to overcome chronic infections simply through antibiotics, simply through herbs, simply through perceptions that are simply superficial, then you're going to go nowhere. And we have lots of people spinning you're out there listening today, people that have been told you've got some sort of infection or series of infections, chronic infections, but we just don't know what to do about it. And so we keep throwing things at you, and it's been a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, your whole life. I've seen it all with these chronic infections. Okay. Sacculina carcini is up in a salt marsh, way up in Carpinteria. And the article goes on to point out that every living thing has at least one parasite inside itself. And many humans have far more. It talks about leopard frogs and how they harbor dozens of parasites. It talks about a Mexican parrot that carries 30 different species of mites on its feathers alone. It goes into the animal kingdom, often alluding to our species, pointing out that it's the norm that animals live with bugs, lots of bugs. And then it goes on to tell the specific story of Sacculina. I want you to appreciate, I want you to evolve an understanding and an appreciation of how clever these parasites can be. I want you to watch Sacculina's, hear Sacculina's strategy. It's this little blob of jelly that swims in the pond with hands and legs. And what it does is it catches the scent. Its sense organs smell a crab. So Sacculina infects crabs. And it begins by swimming by the crab, and it knows where the crab is because it can smell the crab. And it dances through the water until it lands on the armor, on the leg of the crab. And we all know, we've all had crab, we've eaten crab, blue crab, Dungeness crab. The armor of a crab is protective, except where the crab's joint is where its exoskeleton is soft. And this is where Sacculina clings on. And what it does is it sticks a little beak into this softer exoskeleton, and out of its beak comes a digestive enzyme. And that digestive enzyme liquefies the exoskeleton. And so now the little parasite has a way in. And once it gets in, it swims its way into what we call the crab's brood pouch. It sprints its way into the guts of the crab and settles in on the crab's underside. And that's where it sits, male or female. So if it's female, it has a brood pouch, and little Sacculina will swim right to the reproductive place in the crab. If not, it just goes to the underside of the crab, forms a bulge in its shell, and then starts sprouting fingers. This is something that microbes tend to do. They anchor in, they hang out at the home base, and then they send out tentacles. And the tentacles wrap itself around as many and as much a part of its prey's body as possible. With Sacculina, it'll even send a tentacle from the underside of the crab around the crab's eye stalk. Literally, from the underside of the belly to the eye. You have to understand now, these things go on in the human intestinal tract. So it's typical of a parasite to come in, lodge, and grow fingers. And once it grows fingers, it absorbs nutrition. So typically, as is with this crab, the parasite wraps itself around the same place that we absorb our food. The intestinal villi in the human species is where your abdominal parasites like to go. And they live off you. And here's the catch. As with Sacculina, as with many of us, this invasion failed to trigger an immune response in the crab. In other words, we have these detection systems through the macrophages and et cetera, et cetera. And many of these parasites, when they get into the body, and this is true of viruses, and this is true of bacteria, they flip out. They fool the immune system. In the gross biochemical plane, simply through the biochemistry of the body, not the vibrational chemistry of the body, so I'm going to make a distinction, but simply through the hard biochemistry of the body, one of the problems with these bugs when they get into the body, as is the case with Sacculina, is that your immune system doesn't see the bug. Then we go to the mating ritual. How does Sacculina, once it gets inside the the crab's body multiply. And you have to think of yourself, of course. Once the amoeba or the giardia or any host of these little critters get into your intestinal tract or into your brain or into wherever they're going to end up because you can't stop them because you have no immune response, once they get there, how do they multiply? Well, listen to how Saculina multiplies. It waits for a male to do the same thing. The male gets in to the crab's body, and when the male tries to mate with Saculina, it has to molt itself. It has to dissolve itself completely. The male counterpart of the Saculina parasite of the species, as it approaches Saculina, it can't mate, and so what it does is it dissolves its body, and it purely becomes a sperm. In other words, its full body cannot conjugate with the female parasite until it dissolves its entire body. It actually dies and sends a sperm into the female Saculina. And this process begins the mating ritual, whereupon the crab now starts to grow and be taken over by the parasite to the point where the crab's life starts to change. It exists now to serve the parasite. Once the parasite starts growing and multiplying, the crab no longer does the things that the crab normally does. It can't, for instance, when it gets a claw cut off by a predator, when in normal crab behavioral pattern, the arm gets severed. A crab will grow another arm in a period of time, like a lizard will grow a tail. Well, this crab loses its ability to do that. Then the other thing that the crab does is it doesn't mate. It becomes paralyzed, neutered. It becomes sterile. Now, it becomes sterile, but at the same time, it doesn't lose its breeding rituals. So I want you to understand this. The parasite gets into the crab, but the crab doesn't lose its sex drive. It wants to conjugate, and it wants to mate. It can't do it, but it still has the urge. And that urge, the parasite directs within the crab towards making the crab brood and take care of the baby parasites. So what this actually means then, is that a female crab, after it creates multiple crabs in its brood pouch, will sit and bob upside down in the water. It'll bob up and down. It'll hop in the water, and it'll take its arms and legs, and it will send out the little crabs into the water. And this is a typical ritual that we observe with crabs. And the crab has simply been impregnated. It has its babies, and it's sending the babies out into the water for their own life. And what the crab that's infected with the Saculina will do is exactly the same thing. It'll nurse its brood pouch, except what's going out into the water are not little crabs, it's little parasites. So this parasite then infects the crab by dissolving itself, goes down into the underside of the crab, spreads out its tentacles, absorbs the nutrition that the crab is supposed to get, and then changes the crab's mating rituals to the point where if the crab's brood pouch becomes filled, even though it's with baby parasites, the crab can't distinguish between the two, and so it starts spawning off and serving the reproductive intention of the parasite. And the topper is, the males do it too. If a male is infected by this parasite, the male crab will start bobbing up and down in the water, thinking it has a brood pouch, thinking it's pregnant. And it will nurse and cajole and protect and send the little parasites out into the water. So what we're saying is that this parasite's actually smart enough to take over the mating ritual of the animal. It's smart enough to not kill the animal. Note that the animal doesn't die. The animal becomes incapacitated. the animal still has to eat, and the animal craves food. It eats much more food. The crab that Sacculina infects gets fat. It gets voracious in its appetite. But it isn't the crab anymore. Every parasite you study will tell a story like this. They've got all sorts of little tricks in whether they're denying and deflating and deflecting the immune system. Always they're living off the host. Rarely are they killing the host. They just take a cut off the top. And they're tough to find. And yes, amidst antibiotics, amidst herbal medicine, amidst all the things we throw at these bugs, they still exist and they still thrive. And if you look at the statistics, we're as infected today as we were 50 years ago. It hasn't made a difference. In fact, I would venture to say to you that over the next 20, 30 years, we'll see these numbers grow because we're losing basic principle. Now, I'm going to tell you the story of a patient named Vanessa, someone I saw 10 years ago, someone who lost a decade of her life to infections like this. I'm going to really try to get you to understand most fundamentally how you have to look at chronic infection. So I'm going to start in the middle of the trip. I'm going to start with her trip with her boyfriend down in Costa Rica. She went to Costa Rica many years ago. And when she came back from Costa Rica, she had the typical symptoms, gas and bloating and heart palpitations, with terrible insomnia, anxiety, and fear. And these symptoms went on and on and on. And each doctor she went to couldn't find the infection. They weren't even looking for an infection until they started to looking for an infection. And when they finally came upon the thought that she might have an infection, at the top of their list was a bug called H. pylori. And H. pylori lives in the stomach lining. And this hit the market a number of years ago, this concept about H. pylori. And it's a very common diagnosis in allopathic medicine. They test for it, and if you're positive, they'll attribute a whole variety of symptoms all the way to ulcers and cancer to it. And it's not a bad thought. Except what isn't understood very often is H. pylori is a secondary infection. It runs secondary to many other infections. And once your body's susceptible to H. pylori, you're an open field for a multitude of infections. Well, they pin this, and as you'll see mistakenly, on H. pylori. And yes, she had it. And yes, it had overgrown. And yes, when she did the drugs for the H. pylori started to go away. And her symptoms began to improve. And this is very typical in management of chronic infection, because if you understand that there's a sequence of infections in the body, that there's a multitude of infections, that if you just pin one of them and give somebody something to take down now this multi-complicated association of infections, they're going to get better. So if you've got four infections and you can put your finger on the last infection or the secondary or tertiary infection, of course you're going to feel a little bit better. And this is always overrated. They get a secondary or tertiary infection. They don't understand that there's an ecosystem. There's a corporation. There's a commonwealth of infection in the body. And if they can pin it on one, because they can test for one, and they can reduce the titer or the amount of that infection, and they improve symptomology, then everybody throws a party. And Vanessa thought, as well did her doctor, that they had nailed it. And so for 6 months, 8 months, after a number of years and lots of pain, loss of sleep, loss of work, they felt they beat this infection and it was over. You're going to understand the oversight here. Within 2 years, she was as sick as ever. Same symptoms, same problems. And then when they tested for the infection, for the H. pylori was gone. They had it. They didn't have it. They have it. They didn't have it. If you rely in present day chronic infectious disease on these blood tests, on these immune panels, you're going to get yourself into a hill of trouble, because we don't have really the technology at this point to track the infection on the basis of classic blood work. So much to people's dismay is you have the infection, you're given something to get rid of it, your symptoms are better, and lo and behold, all the symptoms come back, but now they can't find the infection. This is a very common thing. It's a very frustrating thing. And it simply reflects something that we're going to get into more. And that is that these intelligences, and I call them intelligences, are smart because they change form. They change location. They swap genes. They're like phantoms. They're spirits. They're ghosts. So now they're there and then they're not. We know this. I know a scientist who studied Lyme disease. In the last 10 years, this scientist has seen Lyme disease change its form about 15 times. Its genetic matrix changed at least a dozen times. Bugs do this. Bugs trade genes fast. They mutate fast. And they have different places to hide. And just because you found their hiding spot one time and it tests positive doesn't mean you're going to find its hiding spot the next time. So H. pylori was negative. Her symptoms were worse. She was more depressed than ever. She was going into her fifth or sixth year of her entire life being turned upside down. A young woman giving her third decade of her life to some infection that no one could find. And I tell you, I've known dozens of people in these positions. You know what was left out? What was left out is that she started, inadvertently, the birth control pill. Now, the birth control pill didn't give her the infection, but the birth control pill, yeah, now this is where, and this is what I hope you can start to appreciate. It's not find the infection and kill it with a drug, find the infection and kill it with an herb. It's about understanding the ecosystem, the terrain, the place that these bugs live in. And the place that these bugs live in is going to be deeply, tremendously affected by something like the birth control pill. Because as you know, I hope you know, the birth control pill thickens the blood. The birth control makes the blood thicker. Estrogen makes the blood thicker. It makes the blood sluggish. That's too simple for medicine to respect. And yet, it's fundamental to your health. Because every system in your body that would counter-effect, that would counterbalance a chronic infection, demands what we call drainage. Drainage from the site. When the site of infection, when the site of potential infection cannot move its fluids through the site, the poisons build up and the microbe capitalizes. That's medicine. That's real medicine. That's functional medicine. That's not superficial nonsense medicine. Medicine that simplifies things down to A plus B equals C. Real medicine would look at the ecosystem. Real medicine would look at the terrain. Real medicine would understand that a potential site for an infection, a site that's a sitting duck for infection, would be a site that's stagnant in the body, that doesn't move its blood. So if you gave young Vanessa something to thicken her blood, and you gave her something to paralyze her nerves, and you gave her something to plug her lymph, and you gave her something to slow down her arterial flow, if you gave her all the things that you give someone to shut down the conduits of fluid and energy in the body, the infections would grow out of nowhere. The minute stasis, rigor mortis, sets in, some degree of it, the minute you slow down flow, bugs grow. Too simple for infectious disease to understand. So in fact, what we had here is a young woman playing around down in Costa Rica, living a life of luxury. She was a professional. She had grad school behind her. She had a great life. She was in her 30s. The American dream come to fruition, and then boom, after a vacation in Costa Rica, life really changes. And after some poor diagnostics, this H. pylori joke, she's back and worse than ever, and nobody puts the pill and blood stasis as one of the factors. Again, is one of the factors. What we're going to do with Vanessa is create a portfolio. And you're going to understand that Vanessa was a sitting duck for an infection. That lots of people live 10, 20, 30, 40 years. They're vulnerable. But as fate would have it, it just doesn't come their way. But the minute they fall down into that hole, if they don't have an understanding that this story may have started long before the infection, if they don't understand that, they may never come out of it. So perspective becomes critical here. So respect for the terrain, not the infection, the terrain. It's very human to look to kill the target. Very human to do that. Very counterintuitive, it appears. Very counterintuitive to put in the time and energy and mentality to wrap your mind around the possibility that it's not the target. You have to change the terrain, the environment. Because that's where the work is. Changing the terrain is not the quick fix. And so the story goes on then. Story goes on because she got a third infection. Now, of course, they don't even know she has the first infection. They know she had H. pylori, but now H. pylori is negative. And then it's discovered. And everyone once again is triumphant because they discover that she has gonorrhea. Gonorrhea is a vaginal infection. And she has lots of pain now when she has her period. And she's got lots of cramping and doesn't understand if it's her uterine organs or her small or large intestine. There's no distinction made between the two. She only knows that she's adding something now that has to do with her period. And then she gets this diagnosis of gonorrhea because she's seeing OBG, because it's the OBG that put her on the pill in the first place. So now we introduce another bug, gonorrhea, to which she's given multiple doses of Cipro. So we have the antibiotics that were given to take care of the first infection, the H. pylori. The fundamental infection, we're not even suspecting, and we'll get to that. The second or third infection, however you want to look at that, they nail, it's called gonorrhea. That's easy. Take an antibiotic and it's gone. She takes multiple doses of Cipro. And yes, it does go away. But guess what? The symptoms don't go away. She tests negative for the gonorrhea, but the symptoms are still there. The OBG is terribly confused. Her holistic practitioners telling her it's her hormonal system. Vanessa, I'm sure it's your hormonal system. You would understand, of course, that under any type of pathological stress, you're going to burn out your hormonal system. Of course your cortisol is going to be exhausted. Of course every one of your fundamental endocrine systems are going to be exhausted. You're always considering the effect of stress in the body, whether it's emotional stress or toxicological stress or microbial stress. We're going into the seventh, eighth year now. And Vanessa is still sick. She doesn't sleep. She can't eat that well. Every herb she tries, herbs now, not allopathic drugs, herbs. All the herbs that Vanessa tries don't work. The minute she takes them, she gets an exacerbation of her symptoms. What every practitioner swears will work doesn't work on Vanessa. It's not just Vanessa. There are hundreds of people like this. Because chronic infections build safeguards into the nervous system of the host. Chronic infections build safeguards into the nervous systems of the host. And one of those safeguards is, if you put something good into your body, it's going to trigger a stress response through the nervous system. And that's going to tell you that what you're putting into your body, even though it's good, is not good. Good things intensify the symptoms. Now that bug has you by the choppers. Now that bug has you by the throat. So these bugs are scam artists. Here's the ultimate scam. You don't even know you have it. Here's the ultimate scam. It keeps you alive. It makes you work for it. If you crave sugar, there's one thing that bugs do. If you don't even know you have it, there's another thing that bugs do. And another thing that bugs do is they make sure that any step in the right direction, anything you do that ultimately will kill the bug, will make you think it's going to kill you. Sound familiar? Sounds like the true source of evil. Sounds like these bugs, if you really let your imagination fly just a little bit, are demonic in their own way. And I personally think they are. I think they have demonic intelligences. I don't see their purpose. Their purpose is to plague. They're parasites. That's not the square deal. And yet this is in part the way the world works. One parasite living off another parasite, living off another parasite. Everyone vying, all bugs vying to trick the other bug into not knowing that they're there. And we just pass it along the food chain. So here's Vanessa now. After 8 years, the symptoms are as bad as ever, and she can't even take herbs. What do you do with something like that? Holistic medicine has to come to terms with what you do with something like that. Allopathic medicine, I hate to say this, barely cares. What allopathic does with chronic parasitic infection is not even acknowledge it. You can just check the statistics. Each week in internal medicine throughout the United States, how many diagnoses in gastrointestinal clinics are given to chronic parasitic infection? A minimum. A very minimum. Acute, different story. An acute parasitic infection is a different story. An acute parasitic infection gives you diarrhea, they give you the drug, you're better, and that's a blessing. That is a blessing. We can cure cholera. If you get cholera, you basically diarrhea out all your electrolytes and you die. Cholera kills each year, I think, more than anything in the world or close to it. But after the infection goes chronic, after the infection is no longer acute, this is what allopathic medicine finds so confusing. And I think this is what holistic medicine doesn't get enough of a grasp on. Because this is truly a common scenario. There are hundreds of Vanessas out there. The first thing that has to be understood is the biofilm. The biofilm. Hit the computer. Hit the sites. And look up the biofilm. A mucopolysaccharide sac that protects the infection. The slime sac in the body that protects the infections. We find these all over the body. We find them on your pacemakers. We find them on your titanium implants. When you get your knee replaced, if we have to do a second replacement or a hip replaced and we have to do a second replacement, we pull out the metal and the metal's covered with slime. Biofilms are found as slime sacs on breast implants all the time. We don't tell you that. We simply pull them out and throw them away and don't comment on the slimy coat. Anytime you put a microbe in the body, if you give it enough time, it finds special ways of protecting itself. And this biofilm, it protects itself against the herb. The herb cannot deliver to the biofilm. The antibiotic cannot deliver to the biofilm. And so you live with this corporation of biofilms. Now, if you get a second infection, you have another corporation of biofilms. If you get a third infection, you have a third corporation of biofilms. Now you have an association. You have a commonwealth. Just like in Europe, every country is part of a commonwealth. If every country was a biofilm, now you have a commonwealth of biofilms. And all those biofilms talk to each other. We know this. We've proven this. All the biofilms talk to each other. And I always know this is going on with the patient because ultimately the patient will say, hey, I feel like something's in me that's alive that's not me. Do you know that's what I look for? Every time when I suspect chronic multiple infections, I look for that admission on part of the patient that something's inside them that's not them, that something wants food, a type of food, an attention that's not them. And that's the biofilm intelligence. That's the intelligence of the microorganism. That's what you're facing. You're facing an intelligence that's a lot different than what antibiotic do I take for this microbe. That's a lot different than what herb do I take for this microbe. You're facing a predator, a smart, organized consortium of predators. So the first thing you have to have is a perception that it's not about a parasite or a virus or a bacteria. It's about an association, a commonwealth of biofilms. Now, if you knew none of this, if you knew absolutely none of this, there is a perception you could bring to yourself if you were, in fact, afflicted in a variety of ways. And that perception is simply the health pot. I call it the health pot. Health is a pot, and into that pot, you invest. And if you don't get out of that pot what you want, you invest more. And if you still don't get out of that pot what you want, you invest more. So even if you didn't know anything about parasites, even if you didn't know anything about anything with health, and just understood that after a year or two or 3 years, when herbs and drugs have failed you, that you just might have to get healthy. You'd have 50% of this licked. There's a concept. There's a concept. Excuse me, I have a little congestion here for some unknown reason. The concept is that half of your healing is just about getting healthy. No, that's too simple. You don't need to know this. You want the exciting stuff. This is a travesty. It is a tragedy. It is a crock. It is a lie. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's stupid. That people with chronic infection are not told point blank, do not waste your money on herbs. Do not waste your money on drugs. Do not waste your money, your time, and your life, or you will end up like Vanessa unless you change your lifestyle. And it's not something that practitioners and the public need to have as a subliminal consciousness. As, oh, yeah, take care of your lifestyle. You have to radically address it. Suppose a patient walked in with chronic infection and they were told, you need to move out of your dingy little apartment near the freeway. Suppose you bought a house near the 405, one block away. I don't think you have a shot. Suppose you put your head up the exhaust pipe of your car and turned it on 7 hours a day. I don't think you have a shot at healing a chronic infection. But that's absurd. You wouldn't do that, but you would live a block away from the 405, right? You would buy a house two blocks away from the 405 freeway or the 101 freeway. You would work at a job where the radiation is so high that you're guaranteed a cancer at 60 years old. You would live for years on 4 hours of sleep. You would eat cooked foods or processed foods. You would have daily high amounts of sugar. The list would go on and on and on and on. And this is the point. This is what you must start to understand. If you're stuck in one of these negative vortexes, these spins and swirls of nonstop, relentless pain and suffering, and you're out of work, and you're out of a life, and you're sitting there, and you've got this vague notion, backed up by tests sometimes, and sometimes not, that you're chronically infected, forget everything else. Just do one thing. Change your lifestyle. Do what? Do everything. And do it fast. And get on it. That's at least 50, 60% of it. You have to change the environment. And if you change that environment, you're going to put the microbe with its back to the wall. And then when you bring in that herb, when you bring in that plant medicine, now maybe we can take a crack at this. So there's a feed the health pot consciousness. There's a biofilm consciousness. And then there's understanding your childhood. Understanding your childhood may have put you in a terrain that made you a sitting duck someday for a microbe. All the aches and pains of your childhood, all the betrayals, all the suffering, all the what dad did and didn't do, and what mom did and didn't do, someday a microbe will capitalize on. What did I just say? That's really left field. It's not left field. Because all those things in Freudian psychology, all those things that happened to you put you in autonomic distress. It put you in sympathetic dominance. It put you in a state of being so that your high intelligences from your hypothalamus to your pituitary, which directs all the chemistry, which directs the immune system, which makes your own immune system smarter and quicker and faster. All of these intelligences don't work so intelligently if you're in sympathetic dominance. And what puts you at 20 or 30 or 40 in sympathetic dominance? I guarantee you it began when the sperm met the egg in your mother's womb. And those 9 months of development in those first 2 to 3 years to 5 years to 6 years, all those things you keep locked down inside yourself. If you haven't worked to balance the autonomic nerves, to turn on the meridians, look at the amalgam, look at the cross section of perception you have to bring to a chronic infection. Look, Jared Diamond wrote the book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, how germs have run mankind from the beginning of time. And we're going to hear from these bugs again in huge ways, in acute ways, not just little quiet ways that we're hearing from them now. And to bring to it a balanced autonomic nervous system is your safeguard. To destroy them vibrationally by moving energy through the body. To be connected to your body. To be connected to your neurological intelligences. I mean this literally. If the magnetic fields of your brain and spine, your spinal cord, do not hit the correct frequencies, the chemistry of your immune system does not work. Where are the studies to prove this? There are no studies to prove this that everyone would agree upon. There is only watching and seeing what happens to people as they heal when their nervous system begins to balance. And we can measure that. We can measure a nervous system starting to balance. We know when the signs, the deep signs of a parasympathetic engagement begin. Like when people start sleeping better. Like when people start digesting better. Like when people stop flipping out when they have a bad day, a bad experience with an herb, a bad experience in a healing. When they start to relax behind their healing. We can see when people start to relax. You can see when people start to relax behind what's happened, when they're not in a state of constant panic. That we can measure. And we can always see that there's an interesting correlation between getting a patient or a person to that state and the acceleration of a healing. That we don't yet have an electron microscope looking at the relationship between that and a smarter immune system cell is not necessary to be functional with this perception of how to deal with your health. Science should put that in its sack and smoke it. But this isn't scientific. Science will always, from the beginning of time and forever, be years behind your common sense. It will always be years behind your common sense. What you observe with people in the field is not necessarily going to be backed up by technology. So are you a slave of technology? If you say no, then the next time you think in your gut that there's a perception of your health that needs to be addressed, and somebody in a white coat looks at you like you're a nut job, gather up your will and your integrity and your strength. And correctly and lovingly ask them to address your statement. Do that. Because then you're respecting your intuitive force. And that will always put you ahead of science. Then you're listening to your common sense. And you will regret not doing that. So we have a biofilm consciousness. We have a feed the pot, the health pot consciousness. We have an understanding about the autonomic nervous system. We have an understanding that that should mean an opening to the flow of energy through the meridians. Now here's the topper. Here's the topper in the Vanessa case. Here's the topper. Her bite was off. The real topper on this is that the six teeth on top and the six teeth on the bottom were not touching. 12 teeth were not being daily massaged by the other teeth. How often I have seen this. Go to Google and look up cranial orthodontics. Look up a guy named Dr. Mark Pick, P-I-C-K, Dr. Mark Pick, whose associations, he's a chiropractor, but his associations with the dental world are legion, the orthodontic world, his associations. Because he knows, and he writes prolifically on the relationship between a balanced bite and the autonomic nervous system, a balanced bite and your health. And he's been around 20, 30 years saying this. So have many others. Once again, go find a dentist to understand this. They're out there. Get on the internet. You'll see their names. lists of them. But by and large, your dentist hasn't understood this. Your dentist doesn't believe in any of this. Your dentist is drilling and filling and billing. They're in the cavity game, the crown game. And again, in a sense, that's not to knock them. Why should they get involved in some dimension of health outside the strict standard of their care? But here's the bottom line. When other dentists do, when orthodontists do get involved, they're criticized. They're quacks. They're nuts. They're threats to the integrity of the profession. And again, it's that common theme. The fringe of medicine is always filled with good, honest, very bright practitioners. The truth, they got bored with drilling and filling and billing. They saw more potential in the art that they possess. And that, of course, elects them as the quacks within their profession. Now, you, the public, have to understand this. So you can't go to an orthodontist and talk to them about the fact that you have a chronic infection that might be parasitic because your bite is off. You can't say that. You see, I didn't tell you to say that. I asked you to study all the dentists and orthodontists that believe in it through their clinical experience. And I can tell you through mine, if you fit this bill and you change your bite and you bring symmetry to your teeth, you're going to experience a massive shift in your health. Point blank. Done deal. Without fail. It's another piece. It's another vital piece. To which someone then is going to say, well, I fixed my bite and my symptoms aren't any different. Of course you're going to say that because you still don't understand what we mean by the terrain. Anything you do is a piece of it. If you have a biofilm consciousness, that's a piece of it. If you feed your health, that's a piece of it. If you balance your autonomic nerves, that's a piece of it. If you turn on your meridians, that's a piece of it. If you symmetricize, if you balance your bite, that's a piece of it. Healing health is about taking all the pieces and achieving critical mass. Now, there's a dynamic reality. A bug gets in to a body that allows the bug to grow. The body recruits all of its life force to stopping the growth of the bug. When the body's basic reserve energy starts to run out at 40 years old, then the bug takes the advantage. Now the bug takes the lead. Once the bug takes the lead, the terrain changes more in favor of the bug. Remember Saculina. Remember Saculina. Swimming like an innocent little pup in the water. Going into the joint, the soft joint in the crab. Spinning on down through the crab's exoskeleton into the bottom of the crab. Ending up in the female brood pouch. Ending up in the belly of the male. Turning the male into a female. Turning the female into brooding what she thinks is her own, but it's really just nothing more than more parasites. And think of the crab's reserve energy. Think of your reserve energy. Your reserve energy starting to go on empty. And now you're 40 years old and your hormones are thinning out anyway. Your hair is thinning. You're no longer fertile. And now these bugs are in there in a terrain that's better for them and worse for you, as they've been starving you anyway over the years from all the food that you were supposed to get and absorb but didn't. So you're cachexic, sleepless, fearful, anxiety-ridden body is now hitting your fourth or fifth decade, and now these bugs begin to grow what? Secondary bugs. And then all this commonwealth of bugs start talking to each other. Your whole body lights up as a disease case, and yet you're kept alive. You are kept alive because you have a parasite. And that parasite needs to keep you alive so it can keep on growing. It never kills the host. That's fascinating to me. Is that fascinating to you? Would you rather I just do question and answers? Or do you want to know the deep reality of health, of what really goes on? Are you willing to stretch your brain a little bit to understand how infection truly works, or do you want to live naive? I think you deserve to know. So I started my school. We're running three schools now simultaneously. People who are interested in understanding what it's about. Because you've been through the mill. You've spun around in circles for decades. You've tried every herb, every pill, every doctor's opinion, every allopathic perception. And you know what? Honestly, the truth. The truth is the only thing you're not given is a perception. All the things that these doctors tell you are in part true. But what we're not doing is piecing it together. We're not piecing it together. You can't build a house without piecing parts together. You can't bake a cake without piecing ingredients together. So why do we try to rebuild someone's health in these secular, superficial ways without piecing all these pieces together? I'll tell you why. Because we're in America. That's why. Because America adopted herbal medicine from other cultures. And our mechanistic Western perception of how to build health doesn't fit the pharmaceutical. It doesn't fit a certain perception of the scientific method. We bought into something that's only in part true, and we've made it into a megalith. Our mind, our decisions, the way we spend our money is run through mechanistic perceptions of reality. Our scientific method is weak often enough. It needs to flex. It needs to bend. And the people who turn around to you when your common sense suggests otherwise and say to you, that's not scientific, they didn't learn science in the first place, not one of them. And we are suffering because of this. So open up your perception and feast. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is straighttalk.cc. You'll need to hear this show again. Get to the website. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.